Hello and welcome to the Blue Toon Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. The Blue Toon Podcast is sponsored by Marco's Chipper. You canna beat the scran, doing it Marco's. This week, Martin and I are joined by summer signing Scott Hooper. Scott had a difficult first year at Balmoor, but was pleased to be at least playing first team football. Here's what Scott had to say.
Right, and this week we're joined by defender Scott Hooper. Scott, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for coming on. How's the Granza fever? How's the recovery from that?
Aye, that's me fully recovered now. I had scans at the hospital. Must be about 3 or 4 weeks back now, and everything's came back and it's fine. My liver's fine, my spleen's fine, so I can get back to full contact sport. But obviously, right now, it's pointless.
Yeah. So, ready to get back playing again?
Aye, I'm kind of getting sick of just pounding the pavements and lifting weights in the gym. It's just getting a bit boring and repetitive. You need that game on a Saturday for a bit of reward, so it's worthwhile actually running.
So difficult to keep yourself motivated?
Aye, it's hard. I always go to the gym, like most days anyway, so I've got quite a consistent balance to my life anyway, so I do get bored yet, but I make sure I've got to go or my mind takes over, so it's kind of my second home really, going to the gym or going out exercising. It helps my mind anyway.
How did the illness come about, and how did you sort of notice there was something wrong?
It was actually about Christmas time, just a couple of weeks after Christmas time. I started feeling sluggish and slow during training in the games, and even in the gym I was feeling like, oh, can I lift this heavy here, or I can't run this fast. And then as the weeks progressed during the games on the Saturday, I was feeling worse and worse, but I just thought it must be for the travelling up the road, or maybe a change in my diet or something like that. But it was before the Airdrie game. I texted the physio, and the physio told the manager, and he just pulled me out of the team completely, which probably helped, because if I played that Saturday, I reckon I could have been in quite a bad way. If somebody had hit my spleen or my liver, then I might have needed an operation or something like that. But I'm glad the manager seen sense and just pulled the plug on me straight away. But that's the kind of manager that he is.
Yeah.
And he's very, very helpful.
Did you realise it was so serious before the Airdrie game, or was it after that that you realised how bad it was?
I never realised how bad it was. I just thought I might have had some sort of flu, but it was a Tuesday night that I just started feeling terrible at the training. And then, obviously, I went to the doctors afterwards I think it was a Monday after the Airdrie game, and they took my bloods. And I think you usually wait maybe 3 or 4 days, but straight away that night he phoned me straight back and says, you're going to need to come back in tomorrow and get more tests took. This is actually quite serious. So straight away he says, no exercise, no gym, no alcohol, no bad foods that could kind of upset it. So it was pretty serious.
Did that make you quite worried at the time when the doctors and the physio said come in the following day? As you said, normally it takes 3 or 4 days, but the fact that it was so quick.
Aye, it did, but it's good to see that they wanted me straight back in to get it sorted. But the only thing I was thinking about was, fuck, I can't get to the gym here. Yeah, I can't play football. Because he says to me straight away, no gym or football for 3 months. And I was thinking, oh my God. And then obviously the coronavirus came up just maybe a few weeks later. And it was a blessing in disguise, really, because I only missed the Airdrie game. And then I think it was Falkirk a week later. So I've only missed 2 games. And it's not that bad, to be fair.
So after all that, you've kind of touched on the coronavirus. And normally we've been asking the guys how the lockdown's been. Yours has maybe been slightly more challenging, considering your job that you've got.
Well, it has. April was probably one of the busiest months ever in the work's history, but that wasn't due to the coronavirus. Dumfries and Galloway, we've been very, very lucky that it's not hit here as bad as other places. We've had a lot of cases, but it's resulted in not that many deaths, so that never took its toll on my work. But it was just other natural occurrences that have made us really busy. It's quite scary in my place of work, where if you're going to have to go and pick a COVID patient up, you've got to make sure you're fully protected. You've got to wash down everything, but that's part and parcel of my job, really. We've just got to be professional and do the best that we can.
Is it giving you a sort of different kind of perspective on it as to, you know, how you go about your day-to-day life?
I think everybody's going to be a lot more cleaner these days. Like, some people have quite bad hygiene, and then hopefully for this, everybody can be cleaner and think more about what they're going to do before they do it.
Okay, so we'll move on to a more sort of cheerier subject then. So you've just finished your first season at Peterhead. A difficult one, would you say, given your injuries and things like that as well?
It's probably been, I wouldn't say my worst career, but one of the worst just through injuries, because I've never really, like last season, I think I played close to 50 games, and then this pre-season I played every minute, every game, and then it was 15 minutes into the game against Cove, and then that was it. I tried to get back up, and then I couldn't run. But I just, I knew something was wrong with me. And it just, that was probably the story of my season. It was stop and start, and that's what I wasn't wanting, because I was wanting to make a good impression on the fans, and then the manager hadn't seen me until really that game, because I think he was on holiday for a week or two when it was pre-season. And during the Aberdeen game, he wasn't there as well. So that would have been the first time that he'd seen me playing. And I wanted to make an impression on him. And obviously, I couldn't really do that until, I think, my first game back was Airdrie.
But since your injury, though, I think Jim said that, or in the press, he certainly said that he's looking to get you signed up for next season. That was back in March. So does that give you kind of a boost?
Aye, that was a bit of reassurance that, even though I've not had the greatest of seasons, that a manager like Jim's status is willing to give me another contract. And I was grateful for that. But obviously, just with what's happening right now, then it's hard to talk about contracts, because I don't think Jim knows what's happening. We don't know what the leagues are going to be like. They obviously don't know what their budget's going to be like, because they don't know if there's going to be any fans at the grounds. It's just a difficult time.
So we'll start at the beginning of your career then, at your sort of hometown kind of club, at Queen of the South. What was it like, your time there? I think you started there as a youth player as well, didn't you?
Aye, I was there since I was 11 year old till I was 22. So I'd been through all the Queens, but I never really... I wouldn't class myself as a first-team player at Queen's, because I played 20-odd games, but some of them were for the bench, so I couldn't really class myself as being a first-team player at Queen's. I was just a bit part player. Mm-hmm. And being a hometown boy, I wanted it to take off at Queen's, but because that was ideal for me, just going around the corner on a Saturday, because I just used to stay 2 minutes down the road, and it was brilliant. Bit of chalk and cheese travelling 4.5 hours to Peterhead. Queen's never really took off for me. And it was Gary Naismith at the time was the manager, and they'd got rid of, I think, about 18 boys. But I'm quite thankful that he released me, because I went away to Annan and I learnt my trade. Because I could have sat on the bench and managers could have kept signing me for backup, and I might never ever have played for Queen's. So at the end of the day, he's done me a favour. Now I've went out the last 2-3 seasons and I've played over 100 games. So he probably thinks I'm quite bitter to him, but I'm not. I'm thankful for what he done at the end of the day.
Was that a bittersweet sort of moment that you were told to go and release the Queens, the fact that it was your hometown team, but the fact, as you said, that you went to Arran and was able to play more football?
Aye, I was quite hurt having to leave Queens because I'd been there 11 years. I knew the club like the back of my hand. But the fact that Arran took me on without really seeing me playing, I was thankful because at the end of the day, they've took a chance on me. And probably through just watching reserve games, that Peter Murphy's took his chance and he's probably heard some good words about me. So I'm thankful to Peter Murphy as well.
That must have given you the confidence to go and kick on through, did it?
Ah, it definitely did, because when you speak to managers, like I spoke to Jim at the start of the season, and they speak about the qualities that you've got, and they try and big you up, and Murphy was the same. I just met him in a Starbucks on a Saturday morning, and he told me how it was really at the end of the day, and he just laid it on the line, and then that was me just kind of won over. So I was quite lucky with Arran as well, because it's only 20 minutes down the road through Dumfries, and it's just on my doorstep again.
Was there any opportunities to leave Queens before you did, or did you kind of hang on to the chance that you might be able to break it into the first team?
That's what I always done. I always just thought, because I think I might have played under five or six managers at Queens at the time, and I thought, surely I'm going to get a chance with one of these guys, because I went to training every day, I worked hard, I done the gym work after it, and I tried to eat well, and I just wanted that bit of break. But at Queens, I probably wasn't good enough, if I'm being honest. There was guys there that were experienced pros that were better than me, and I'd never played games, so I felt nervous even sitting on the bench. So I don't know what I'd be like if I was playing regularly. But I probably wasn't good enough to play at Queens in the championship level at the time. So I was glad that I left and I learnt my trade, because I think I could probably go back to the championship now and I would be better suited for it, because I've played that many games. Kind of, I know what my pros and cons of my game are. So I think I'd be better suited now than what I was when I was 18 till I was 22.
Do you think if it had never been Queens, your hometown team, you wouldn't have stuck around so long, nay playing regularly?
Oh, I would have been away after two seasons if I wasn't playing. Kind of, I was just making the bench every week, and as a defender, you're the last pick to go on, really. Again, you always put strikers on before me, so I think I was just happy that I was a younger boy at my hometown club getting a chance just to sit on the bench. And it made me, when I walked around Dumfries, people looked at me and thought, oh, there's a Queens player. And that made you kind of feel good about yourself. But at the end of the day, I wasn't a Queens player because I never played. I was just a training player. So I didn't really class myself as a Queens player, if I'm being honest. I was there for 11 years and I only played 20-odd games. So at the end of the day, it was pretty pointless. But I was thankful for them that they kind of signed me every year. And they never built my hopes up, but I always gave it 100% and tried my best. So I'll always be grateful that they looked after me through that many years.
It was a decent team at Queens at the time, because I think they had back-to-back fourth place finishes in the championship.
Aye, there was Jim McAnally. Jim McIntyre was the manager, and he had Billy Dodds and Jerry McCabe as his backroom staff. So well-known guys in the Scottish game, but he was relentless. It was always hard work. Like, you had to be fit, and he had a great system of playing. And all the boys played for him, and he finished. Aye, they got to the playoffs 2 years in a row. But aye, that was a really good team then. It was Andy Dowie, Chris Higgins, Matt Dunnan that were all centre halves. So I was really at the end of the day hoping for them to get injured or suspended for me to even get a chance of playing. But that's the way you've got to think if you're a young boy as a player to try and get a game, but it never really happened. I think only ever really played under Jim was when it was the last two games of the season, where managers just chuck a young boy on and they give them their chance or their debut. So, but But I was thankful that he gave me my chance to play as well. Like, I'll never disrespect that.
Yeah.
But that was a really good team, and again, I wasn't good enough to play ahead of them boys at the time.
The 14-15 season, you finished fourth behind Hibs, Hearts and Rangers. What kind of season was like that, even though you weren't really playing? What kind of season was that, even going to places like that?
Oh, it was brilliant. Tynecastle I'm a Rangers fan and I loved Ibrox, like, walking out, because I played against Rangers, and that's my best moment in my career. I could retire the Mora, and I'm happy that I've played at Ibrox in front of 50,000, Ken, because Rangers liked Queens, because Queens voted yes for them. So they always brought the full support. So when I walked out of Rangers and Penny Arcade was playing, that was my dream come true. But for me, Tynecastle was unbelievable, because the stands are so steep that the fans are upon, like, you're on you. Even when you're warming up, you're getting dogs abuse, and I just loved that. But Hibs, they're a massive club as well. They always felt out Palmerston. That year, Palmerston actually opened up the old Terregal Street end, and we could fit another 2,000 fans in. So it was an even better atmosphere, and it helped the club, because the club was they were in debt at that time, and bringing all them fans, getting full houses most week, it brought the club into the green, and then it's kind of set Queens in good stead.
You thrive playing at places like Tynecastle and Ibrox. So give you lifters that make you more nervous as a player.
It was weird, because I played at Ibrox and I never took in the fans running about me. As soon as that whistle went, then you're just focused on the game. So I think you're always focused on the game. You'll always hear that one or, like, up at Peterhead or at Palmerston, it's or stadium, so you'll always hear that them one, two idiots will shout your abuse. But when Ibrox or Tynecastle and it's 20 and 50,000, it's just a wave of noise, really. You can't really single one person out. But you knew you had to be on your game when you're playing teams like that, because if you weren't, you'd get eaten alive, and you would find yourself 2-3 goals down in 10 minutes if you weren't up to it.
So at the age of sort of, 21, 22, you kind of decided you needed to be playing more. What was the kind of the turning point then? Was it just a case that you weren't getting any game time?
Nah, Naismith came in at the start of the season, and then I wasn't getting on the bench. But for some reason, I don't know if it was me or him that says that I wasn't allowed to go out on loan. So I think Annan was trying to get me, and I'd been at Queen's Park Gus McPherson, I think James Fowler was my manager at the time. And I went out on loan there for a month, and I loved it. I played 7 games in a month. So I wanted to get back out on loan. I wasn't even getting in the squad at Queen's on a Saturday, and I was just having to go and play with the reserves on a Tuesday night. And it was soul destroying, because I trained every day of the week. Like, I was training the first team Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, half day runs on a Saturday, and then I would be training with the 20s on a, kind of play the game on a Tuesday night, and then I would train on a Wednesday with the 20s as well. And then I would go to the gym on a Sunday. So I never really, that was a hard year for me, because I was training and not getting any rewards for it. And I was a young boy, so it's not as if I was getting paid handsomely to do it. Kind of, I just wanted to play football and try and put myself in a shop window, but it wasn't happening.
So after you moved to Ireland, was it a bit of an adjustment?
Definitely, because straight away I played every week. I played me at right back, and the first season wasn't the greatest. I think I maybe only played like 25 games out of the 40, but again, that was better than sitting on the bench every week, kind of. But I loved that, and I trained. It was a great atmosphere with the boys, and then I actually got a game on a Saturday, and my mood changed, because I used to go home and my family would hate it. Lisa hates it now. If I didn't play on a Saturday, the whole week, you're just better not talking to me. Honestly, I'm a nightmare to live with.
So she she must be pulling her hair out just now then.
Aye, she is, but luckily I'm still at work, or same, she couldn't hear me go left.
Second season at Arran then, a lot more positive in your captain as well.
Aye, that was the season that kind of, well, no made me because I'm only playing League One football again, but that was the season where I was consistent every week, and then I think it was Pete Watson and Steve Swinglehurst, they were the captain and vice-captain, and I think they might have been suspended, because they were always getting red cards, to be fair. but aye, so Murphy kind of had the belief to make me the captain, and then even when them boys came back in, he just kept me as captain for every game, until even in the playoffs, I think I was the captain, so I've had a lot of respect for him for doing that, because he could have easily just made Peter Steve the captain again, and then put me back, just back down into my place.
How did it make you feel going for being on the bench at Queen's and then being captain?
Oh, you actually have a bit of belief in yourself, you get the confidence, because see, at Queen's I thought, I'm never going to be a football player. Honestly, I had no belief whatsoever, and I hated it. I actually thought, I'm going to stop playing football because I'm no good enough. I'm not going to make a career yet. And it's not going to be financially stable for me. But then I spoke to people and they says, get a good part-time club, get a good job, and you'll enjoy it better. And then one day maybe you'll have the chance to go back full-time if it's right. So that's what I've done, and I'm glad I've done it.
Would you go back full-time? I know it's probably it's a rhetorical kind of question, but if you got a chance, would you go back full-time?
Aye, we'd love to go back full time, but as long as it's the right team, and let's be honest, these days everything's money orientated, and right now, like working and playing part time, you're the only clubs that are going to give you that kind of money is maybe top four championship and SPL, and let's be honest, I'm probably not good enough right now to be in any of them clubs, them 14, 16 clubs, so I'm probably better off doing what I'm doing.
How disappointed were you with the playoffs last season?
Ah, man. I thought, especially against Clyde. I like Clyde for the reason that their fans are always on you, and they're actually pretty a decent club, but they're like Marmite. You love to hate them, but you hate to love them. I don't know, there's something, I've got like some sort of soft spot for Clyde, but every game was hard against them, but I always wanted to beat them. But aye, that just getting beat by them in the playoff final really got to me, because Annan's, they'll never have probably a better chance of getting up again for a few years. But aye, it was so destroying getting beaten that. It was only League 2 playoff, but still, it's a final and you want to win that final.
Was it more disappointing because you'd won the first leg, or was it disappointing because you conceded so late?
I actually never played in the first leg, so the manager left me for the second. Well, Goodwillie missed a penalty in the first game as well, so I thought, the luck's on our side here. We're hopefully going to do it. And then Chrissy Johnson scores, so I thought, 1-0, here we go. We just need to kind of not hold it for a draw, but hopefully if we sneak a goal, then we can maybe kind of sit back. But that's just, it never worked like that. They got the goal, the fans were on their side, and then they just kind of took momentum to there. And they only look like the team winning on that day, if I'm being honest.
If Arran had gotten promoted then, would you have stayed there, or were you already
on the move? I probably would have. I think there was maybe 10 first team players that actually left Arran last year that were starting most weeks, and they all said that they would have stayed as well if the club had gotten up, just to show that kind of loyalty to them. But obviously, I wanted to step up a league and show what I could do and see if I could actually play at League One. So I had to take that risk. And especially at Peterhead, it was kind of getting myself out of that comfort zone, because I could have stayed in League Two and played maybe at Annan for another so many years. But the fact that I've travelled 4.5 hours every Friday night to come play at Peterhead and change my routine has made a lot of help for me, because I know that I can play 20 minutes away and I can play 5 hours away. It doesn't really bother me.
Was your record against Peterhead the kind of swaying thing for you? Because I think you played 9 games and you lost 7 times.
Aye, was it no lost 8?
Oh, maybe 8. I was maybe being generous.
Aye, you were being generous. But the game that we beat is, we gave you an absolute doing. But you won the league, so it never really mattered.
No, I didn't, I know.
I think the first game that we played against Peterhead, I think Rory put you in the top corner for the, or was it Jamie Stevenson, for about 30 yards in the very last minute of the first game of the season, yeah. And I thought, here we go. But Peterhead top quality side when we played against them, so that was another reason why I joined them. I knew most of the boys and I knew how good they were, and they were too good to be playing in that division. So if I thought, well, I can play in that team, they're only going to make me better.
You signed quite early on in the pre-season for Peterhead. Had you already been speaking to Jim earlier on, or was it just one of those things?
I've always knew Willie Gibson since I was a younger boy, so he kind of helped sway me going to Peterhead, because him and Greg Fleming obviously are feeding this way, and then I knew Aidan was going to be signing, and he's by a cousin of mine, so that made it kind of easier that there was going to be 4 years, and then we, Sam Henderson, so there was actually 5 years in the car, so it made it a lot easier that as long as it was a long journey, but there was 5 boys there to take your mind off it, so that made it easy. But Willie had the talks going quite early on, and he was speaking to Jim for me, and then Jim phoned me a few times early on in the pre-season basically, and I just wanted it done as quick as I could, really, to be fair. I just wanted to know who I was playing with, where I'd be playing it.
Did you need much persuasion to join?
No, because I think I said earlier that they spoke about my attributes that I would bring to Peterhead. You know, he said I could play right back, centre half, and that he'd seen me for the last 2 seasons, and he knew what I was all about, and he knew that I would fit in at Peterhead. And everything was sat, laid out in front of you. It was made easy. So it just took your mind off it. And there was just no worries, no stress. And he made it so simple to sign.
Are you following Aidan, or is Aidan following you? Because this is the third time you've beat it. Teams
he together. He follows me. He's the sheep, I'm the shepherd.
Is it just one of those kind of things? It's you've been at the same team, or is there a genuine sort of partnership there?
No, I think it's a thing where we're obviously local to Dumfries, so every half-decent local player will play with Queens. And then the second best club in the area is Annan. So Aidan was quite a strong, short, like, quick, stocky boy, so... And he scored goals, so obviously the next best option is Annan, so Annan were going to sign him. And then Peterhead, I don't know why we both kind of looked at going there, because it's opposite end of the country. But it just seemed to work at that moment in time, so we both thought, hey-ho, let's give this a bash.
You mentioned the travelling. Did that kind of come into your mind as a thing you maybe wouldn't have done?
No, if I had to travel on a Saturday morning for a game, then I wouldn't have done it, because we'd done it at Annan, like you go to Peterhead and Elgin in the mornings, and you turn up on a Saturday and your legs felt terrible. Your back, I was only about 22, 23, 24, and my back and my legs felt terrible. Kind of, I couldn't do that every week, but it was just there when we had the windy spell for about 3 weeks, didn't we? We thought the game was going to get called off every week, so we never stayed up on a Friday night. So we had to travel up on a Saturday morning. We were getting told, like, I was leaving at 6:30, and you weren't getting there till 1 o'clock. So you felt terrible for these games. And that never helped me with my glandular fever either. And I just felt like a bag of Washington on a Saturday, just going through the motions, trying to get through the game and hopefully do well.
Was Derek Lyle at Queen's at the same time as you?
Aye, what a man he is.
I was going to say, has he changed in the years since?
Nah, he's still an idiot. he has changed, to be fair. His teeth have got whiter, and so is his hair. His tan's still brilliant, and so is his six-pack. But he's now changed one bit. He's still Mr. Banner. He's like a class clown. But he's brilliant to have in the dressing room. He's getting older now, so he's actually starting to help you develop like the younger players. But before, he was just full of nonsense. And I think he's trying to get in the management a wee bit. But he struggles to set up a possession box 10-10, so we'll see how that goes.
Looks as though he's going to be playing another season, part into his 40s. That's saying something, though, isn't it?
It must be the hills or the mountains that he's climbing, and he must be drinking some sort of magic water. Nah, but Dell's a true professional. Like this year he was going in with Queens in training full time, and then I think he loves the boxing. He tries to keep fit doing that. But a young boy should aspire to be like that. If I'm playing football at 40, then I'll not be playing football at 40.
even at the level he's at, to be playing at 40 is some achievement.
Oh, he still scores goals, and that's what he needs. He's like a talisman up front. Anything in the box. He's probably, him and Dobie are probably the best two finishers I've ever seen. Anything inside the box, or just 20 yards out, they'll just thin the target most times. He's a proven goal scorer everywhere he's been, and it's good to have somebody like that in your team. Even though you're just bringing him on maybe at the end, but if he gets a chance, he's going to score.
What sort of things can you learn from Derek Lyle? Obviously, you're in different positions completely on the park, but what sort of things can you learn as a youngster coming in?
He's smart. Obviously, he's not got the speed anymore, but he uses his brain, and he knows what where to be, like the right place at the right time. And if a young boy with speed can use his brain and use his pace at the same time, then it's a great combination. But he always tells Aiden, just get yourself in between the sticks. Can the goalposts never move? If you're in that position, then the ball, it's going to come to you at some point, and you'll be at the back post ready to score. Bell scored so many goals like that over his career that he's just been at the right place at the right time. And you can't really teach that. He's always just had it naturally. But if you just watch and you learn and you listen, then it is going to help you in the long run. And Aiden needs that, to be fair. I've always tried to tell him that.
You mentioned how big a character is. There is a few characters in the dressing room. Is that a good thing to have, especially when you're going through a spell or bad results?
Aye, because they, like Sasai and Dell and kind of like Paddy, boys like that, they keep the spirits up. Because if you never had them and you were getting beat most weeks or drawing or winning an odd game here, then the squad would be deflated. We wouldn't want to turn up on a Saturday, but because the banter's that good, you look forward to going to training on a Tuesday and staying over on a Friday night and playing on a Saturday. Like, we've got great team spirit, and we actually played decent football when we got the ball down and moved it. We just never had that luck, really, this season. But aye, them boys, they help massively. They always put a smile on your face if you're feeling terrible.
So after you go back for your ankle injury, I think you ended up playing like 16, 17 games on the bounce before your illness. That's quite a run to have.
I never expected to. I think I only trained maybe on a Tuesday and I was straight back in on a Saturday. Probably because the results weren't really going for us, so I maybe thought, put Scott in, it might be give the team a wee lift. But we ended up getting beat that day as well, 2-1, but we actually played really good against Airdrie. But I just wanted to get back in and show the fans and why the club had signed me, and just to kind of pay back to the chairman and the board. And have that bit of belief in me again.
You, majority of the time, you said at Arnhem, you were at right back. Did Jim sort of give you any indication that where you'd be playing? Because I think majority of the time you played at centre half.
Aye, well, I came in at pre-season and then I played right. I played centre half against the junior team and Aberdeen, and then I played right back against Fraserburgh, and then I played right back against Cove in the very first game. So I thought, oh well, I must be going to be playing right back. But I think, I don't know if Big Mick was injured at the time, so that's maybe why he chucked me straight back in there, that he needed somebody to play there, because Ted's obviously, he was in the team of the year at right back, so you're not really going to move him. And Jason and Paddy, they're obviously just been in that back four, so I just slotted in beside all them kind of perfectly.
Have you got a preference of which position you go for, or you're made to play in?
Most players will say it, as long as you're playing, you're not really bothered. But I liked playing right back because I got higher up the pitch, and maybe you didn't need to worry about that defensive side just as much. But as a centre half, you've always got to be switched on, and this season I was prone to maybe a goal or two gain away. So kind of there's a bit more pressure at centre half than there is at right back. But again, it's quite good playing centre half because you can drop and get on the ball, and it's you that's actually starting to play for the team. So there's pros and cons of playing both positions, but again, as long as I'm playing, I'm not really bothered.
I would say when we found out that you were signing, we did think that obviously you'd be playing at right back, and then maybe Jamie Stevenson would be playing further forward. There was maybe a slightly different formation. I think he maybe ended up playing rather than the normal sort of 4-4-2. I think we went with 5 in midfield, so maybe that was maybe the thinking he had.
Aye, we played against Fraserburgh and I was right back, and I think Ted was right mid. But if I'm being honest, we were shite that game, so that maybe took that out of the gaffer's head. And then we played the 4, it's kind of like a 4-1-4-1, which turned into a 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1. And that was our best position, best formation. We just sitting in front of back four, and then the rest could kind of go and roam and do what they wanted to do. But we never just really got that luck in the box, and we never scored that goal. We would have been the best team in the league if it was 18-yard box to 18-yard box, because we were shite in our box, and we couldn't score another box.
I know, we've spoken about it many times over the season, just that bit of luck. I mean, especially, I think it was the Jason Brown game against the Ayrshire, and he hit 2 shots off the line back-to-back. I mean, that just sums up the season.
Aye, it hasn't been a successful season. The only good thing to come is that hopefully in the reconstruction that we're still going to be in League One. That's a positive you can take, that he stayed up. And because Davey, every game this season we were getting beat, was like, don't let these fucking boys down, they worked hard last season to get up into this division, don't go out without a fight, can you better stay in this league, basically what he was telling you. So you were kind of fighting for the club every week, trying not to get beat and stay in that division for the fans.
Colin and I have said for numerous months now that it's a very competitive league, but there was never any game that we felt that we're totally outclassed. And even though we'd gotten promoted, it's very much a league where MD could beat anybody on their day. Did you feel that as players playing in the games?
The only club that I felt beat us convincingly was Falkirk, obviously. But let's be honest, with their budget and the players and the stadium and whatever, they should have won the league quite comfortably. It shows how hard the league is that they never went up, and Rafe went up. But that was a credit to Rafe as well, because they were good. They were a gritty team. Like we battered them twice at their bit in the last two games, and they still beat us both times. So that just shows how good a team that they are, that they can grind out their wins.
Yeah, tell us about your partnership with Jason Brown. Then, how effective do you think you two are as a partnership?
I actually worked pretty well, because Jason's just a big meathead, and he just likes going head or everything. So I would just kind of wind him up. I'm like, go on, Jason, go on. Every time I would G him up, and he would just go through and header somebody or tackle them, and then I could just kind of sweep up behind him and look good, basically, at the end of the day. But I think it took maybe two or three games to understand what Jason was like playing, and he was probably the same with me. So I would cover him and he would cover me, and I knew what he was going to do with the ball most times, so I would either drop off and take it off him or just push up. But we're both young and I think we worked quite well. We did give away a couple of goals for bad mistakes, but we both came back most weeks still wanting the ball and still fighting for the team every week. And even though you get a goal away, you've got to put your hands up, say that's my fault, but the next game you've got to get straight back on the ball and take the bull by the horns and just try your best.
We'll ask them the same question, we'll ask you as well, but did you think that after Dunlop left, the lack of maybe experience in the defence didn't help, especially the second half of the season?
You do. I think you do need somebody in that central position with a bit of experience, because obviously you've got Ted at right back or Paddy at left back. They've got great experience, but because they're outside and not in that central zone in the nucleus, that they're not really going to affect the game as much. But it's probably made me and Jason learn more not having somebody experienced in there, so it's probably a blessing in disguise that we've been just thrown in there the deep end with nobody that's experienced beside us, because we've had to learn for ourselves. It's either sink or swim at the end of the day, and we've never done the greatest, but we can learn from it. We were learning every week.
You would have had David McCracken at the start of the season, who obviously would have passed on his experience, and obviously after he left there was nobody really to take on the defence.
Nah, Cracks would have me and Jason doing headers after like most sessions, and he would take the defenders away for kind of like structural stuff and 1v1s and stuff like that. So it was good having Cracks there. And then it was just really Si that took the training. Big Mick, he just like getting training finished, getting his food, getting in the shower and getting down the road. So that's just a stage of his career where he just wanted to get back into the see his wains or whatever. But so me and Jason just kind of done our own stuff. We would just do headers with each other, just make sure we were ticking over. But it does help having an experienced pro there that can take your game forward. But we never really had that at the end of the season there.
Have you got an answer to the mystery of the number changes in the
second? Jason was raging, by the way. I listened to his interview and he came across as he wasn't bothered, but he never spoke to anybody that whole warm-up since he got told he was getting changed. He was absolutely raging.
Okay, why was he raging?
He wanted to stay number two. That was his number. He thought he was the main man at number two. But I was like, see you later, you wee scuddy. Get off my number.
Jason kept that quiet.
I did. He was not happy one bit. He thought I was lying. So I said, go and speak to the manager. He's made me number two. You're number five. Beat it. But he wasn't happy whatsoever.
So it's your fault there was a number change then?
I was number 15. So I think I was going to be playing right back against Airdrie, so that's when he made me number two. And obviously Mick had left, so it just made sense. And then we had brought in Cookie, so Cookie he's a left mid, he's not going to be number two, is he? So it made sense for me just to go number two, Jason number five as a centre half, and then Cookie is 15. Aye. But he wasn't happy whatsoever. He never spoke to anybody.
Well, wait till we see him again then. David Ferguson came in as well. He played the majority of the time right back as well. How was the sort of partnership between you three as young kind of defenders, just sort of learning your trade?
I can't remember what game it was, but there was 3 years we were at the back and we actually done pretty well, and there was people commenting on how good it was. And then I'm sure they played the next week and we were absolutely shy. So it's hard as three young boys that maybe haven't played in a three before. you've just got to take it as it comes during the game. But Fergie's a decent player. Like, he came for full time at Ayr, so you'd expect him to be a good player. Probably just lacks a bit of confidence.
Yeah.
Probably like myself, when I first kind of started playing regularly, week in, week out. But I got better and better as the games went on. So we're all comfy footballers, but we just need to show it more often.
So how would you sort of sum up your first season then, all in all?
Mediocre. Just to stop and start for me, with injury and illness. And gave away a few goals. I had decent performances, but I never contributed to any goals, nay assists. At the end of the day, I was just trying to be a solid defender, and that's what I really done. I wasn't exceptional in any of the games, really. I was just in there trying to do a job, and it probably wasn't the greatest of seasons for me, coming off the back of last season where I was probably got the top assists in League Two as a defender. And again, we just had a successful season, and this year it doesn't feel successful for me. But I know that I can play League One football now. Again, it's probably a bit of pressure that's been took off me.
Do you think if you sign on again next season, you've got a point to prove?
I do, and it's just to show back to the manager if I signed again, that just like a thank you, basically, because I've not had a great season and I've had obviously the injury, and some managers might see that and think, oh, he might be injury prone. So, but we'll see what happens. I don't know what's happening with contracts just at this moment in time, just with what's happening. Nobody really knows what's happening and nobody's really spoke to me, so I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to keep trying to work hard and keep fit then.
I guess we're getting towards some kind of decision. Hopefully, like the Championship, we might be playing again sort of October time.
The SPL and the Championship know that when they're playing, but obviously they've left League 1 and League 2 scuddies to the back, so no comment on that.
That'll be for another podcast, don't worry about it. Long term then, you're 24, 25 now, what's your kind of plans, maybe towards the end of your career? Have you thought about that kind of things yet, or are you just lucky?
I still want to try and play as high as I can, and maybe one day I get back to the Championship just to prove to myself that I can play at that level. And when I was at Queen's, I obviously wasn't good enough, and just want to show that maybe I am good enough now. If I went back to Queen's now, I think I would probably do a job, and I would like to do a job as a homegrown boy, just to go back to my club. I'm still a fan of the club. I still look out for the result, like, every week, and I want them doing well. So maybe if I went back there one day, then that would kind of be the final farewell, kind of the fairy tale ending for me, to be fair. But we'll see what happens. Just to try and play at the highest level I can for the rest of my career.
We've heard other guys speak about Jim and his willingness to get guys playing at the highest level or to do the best that they can. Do you get that kind of impression for Jim as well?
Aye, he's so easy to talk to. He just makes it feel relaxed. It's like you're just talking to one of the boys when you're talking to Jim. Everything's just easy, and and he's played at a high level, so you respect the guy. He is a top gaffer as well. He wouldn't stand in your way if a team came for you, but he would give you the best advice that he could on the situation, which, if he's been there and done it, it makes it easier for you because he obviously knows the ins and outs.
And if you were to go back and start playing again, would you prefer behind closed doors, or do you think it should be played in front of fans again?
I've not watched any of the German football. I think it's a waste of time. If you've not got fans, then you shouldn't be playing football. It's as simple as that. Especially in Scottish grounds, there's no many fans. Ken, there's 700 fans that got a Peterhead in these weeks. You could easily separate them out and have some sort of system. But again, SFA, I don't
We've kind of mentioned the SFA a few times this season, and we've read, you know, bits and pieces for Jim and even Roger Morrison as well. The League One, League Two just seems to be left altogether.
I was forgotten about. It's like, I don't know why, because we're a massive part of Scottish football as well. Just because we're a part, there's part-time clubs playing in the Championship, so what's the difference between them part-time clubs and us? And obviously there's Falkirk, Partick's in this league as well now, so they're massive clubs, so they all want to know what's happening.
Yeah. And having those guys, most of those guys at Falkirk, Airdrie as well, I think, Park Thistle, you said, they're all full-time. So the clubs won't be able to afford to pay them if they're not going to be playing until sort of October, November.
No, not a chance. Like, if you sign for a club now, like a new club, then you're not entitled to the furlough. So if clubs want to pay that wage, then that's just, the profits are going to just turn into losses at the end of the day. And Scottish football is going to, it's going to be a sad state of affairs for many years to come, I think, because of this.
Do you worry that there's going to be guys that you know or you're close to that are going to end up not getting a team for next season?
I think everybody will get a team, but they might not just get the money that they're on now. Like, even teams in the Championship are maybe going to have to take chances on players in League One. Just not to be squad fillers, but to actually play. Because these bigger players, they're not wanting to wait around as long as that. And they're just going to thin a team straight away. So these Championship clubs are going to need to fill their squads with League One or League Two players. So in a way, it could be a good thing for some players that they might get to play at a higher level.
And young players as well, I suppose, maybe they'll be cut and hung out to dry altogether.
Aye, they could, but again, they're cheaper options, younger boys. And right now, what a better time to play a young boy in a team to get him experience than right now. Because these bigger players, clubs only got to want to pay that wages, so they may as well give the young boys a chance. Like, I wish that happened to me when I was younger. I wish I got a more of a chance. So you can take the positives for this COVID in football, that young boys might actually get a chance.
Is that something that you might kind of, as your career kind of progresses, and obviously you become a bit more experienced, you think that you might be able to sort of pass on your experience to the younger players?
Hopefully. Obviously, I've not played at the highest of level, but I feel as though I've got quite a good understanding of the game that I can pass it on. But I hopefully I can kind of go into the coaching role as well. I can see myself coaching. I quite like the fitness side of it as well, so maybe kind of, I wouldn't have got a uni to do a sports science degree or whatever, but I've got quite a good knowledge of that side of the game as well through the trying to do a bit of personal training just now, so could maybe take that into the game and help the young boys with their eating and their gym work as well. So
do you follow the footsteps of Hoggy and be still doing it at 80, do you think?
He's an inspiration, that man, isn't he?
Aye.
How his hair is holding on to his heat, I remember.
he's had quite a career himself. Not just with football as well, but his athletics career.
Aye, we had him in the car one day coming home from Aberdeen, and he was just rattling off like the athletics like stars that he has trained. Like he's trained people that have won gold medals at Olympics. Like you've just got to sit there and listen and take it in, because the man obviously knows what he's talking about. And you wouldn't be at these SPL clubs back today if you did not know what you're talking about. So it is good having him there. He always sends you messages and says what runs you've got today and what exercises you've got today. So he's been good during this time as well.
Good stuff. Right, we're going to end with some sort of quick fire questions, if that's all right. One that I think you've probably touched on already, but what's been your career highlight?
Aye, playing at Ibrox, or even just playing at Palmerston in front of like the Dumfries people was great for me.
Who's the best coach that you've worked under?
I don't know. Peter Murphy gave me a chance at Annan, and I was always, and he's a great manager, his training is great. But Jim McIntyre at Queen's as well, obviously, he brought me up to the first team for the youths, and he gave me my debut, so him and Dodgy seemed to like me, I think. So it's either between Murphy or McIntyre.
Okay, who's the best player you've played with?
At Lower was Chrissy Johnson. He was obviously Peterhead, people know him. I don't know if he'd done the greatest at Peterhead, but he was branded the mini Messi at Kilmarnock. But probably Stephen Dobie. Just the career that he's had from where he started, it's inspirational and brilliant.
What stadium would you like to play at that you haven't played at already?
I've never played at Parkhead, so, and I've never been to the stadium, being a Rangers fan, so I would like to probably tick that off the list. I probably would Parkhead.
Who's your best mate in football?
You're expecting me to say Aidan Smith just because I'm going to. But, he does my heeding when it comes to football. I've tried to baby him for about the last 10 years and he still doesn't seem to listen. So, I don't know. Well, I like Willie Gibson and Dan Carmichael. They're probably, and Tommy Muir, them three boys, and me, Aidan. And then, well, I've probably got to say Big Flem as well just because I've travelled with him for a year. Aye, big sleeping tablet.
What's your favourite TV show?
I've actually started watching Open Goal quite a lot recently, just during this. But probably Still Game.
Good choice, definitely.
If you were running the country for one day, what would you do?
What a question that is, by the way.
Left field.
What would I do? I'd probably rob every bank in the country, as long as I didn't need to get the money back.
Okay.
Make life easier, wouldn't it?
The last one I've got for you, Scott, is if you weren't a football player, what sport would you have liked to have been involved in?
Probably I try and play golf. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I would probably be a golfer, travel the world, make millions. That's some life, innit?
Easy as that.
Aye, simple.
Last question, have you got a karaoke song?
I like a bit of She's Electric by Oasis. Oh. That's probably my go-to. Easy enough to sing, and it gets the crowd going.
Good stuff. Right, thanks for watching, Scott, for coming on.
Cheers, boys.
Thank you. Cheers.
That was Scott Hooper there with some honest words on his career at Peterhead so far. We'd like to thank Scott for joining us, and our thanks also go to our sponsor, Marco's Chipper. And as always, we'd like to give a huge thanks to you guys for listening. That's it for this week. We'll see you all again very soon. Cheers.